Coming up on This Week in Radio Tech, Chris Tobin is hosting the show, and our guest is Robbie Green. He's the director of engineering at Entercom in Houston, and both Chris and Robbie have been working a lot in the last couple of years on visual radio. That's cameras in the studio, how to switch them automatically, make sure they sound good, and how to make sure they go out over social media just right. Chris Tobin, Robbie Green on today's TWIRT. This Week in Radio Tech is brought to you by Broadcasters General Store, with outstanding service, savings, and support, online at bgs.cc. By Angry Audio. Audio problems disappear when you get angry at angryaudio.com. And by MaxConnect Wireless, prioritized high-speed internet service designed for transmitter sites and remote broadcasts.
Well, how about that? Well, thank you, Kirk. As you can imagine, Kirk's on assignment this week, so it's just myself and Robbie. We're going to have a good time. Visual radio. Who would have thought? Now, I've worked in television and radio, and there was a time when I worked in a television facility, and they used to mock us at the radio group. And I used to laugh and say, you know, it's a funny thing about that that raster control in the car. I can't seem to get it to work. And then there's this look on their face like, yeah, I get it. Okay, yeah, we're the TV without – you're TV with radio, and we're radio without TV. Okay, I get it. In any case, visual radio is now here with us, multimedia, whatever you want to call it, and it's all about generating revenue. I'm going to be blunt about it, and Kirk and I have talked about this for many years, and I think this episode of This Week in Radio Tech, you're going to enjoy it. It's going to be something totally different. So without any further delay, let's bring our guest in, Robbie, and we'll talk about what's going on. We'll have him introduce – where he's located, what he does, and what his most recent studio activities were, and then we'll get into the conversation.
Hey, yeah, my name is Robbie Green, as Chris pointed out, and anyway, I'm the Director of Technical Operations here at Entercom in Houston, and gosh, what haven't we done here lately? We actually rebuilt our entire 15 studio complex here about a year and a half ago, changed out all the audio consoles, basically removed all the floors. It was built on raised floors and everything, and you know, redid pretty much the entire place to make it a lot more functional for the stuff that we are talking about here today. Moving forward, we did a lot of stuff to incorporate you know, cameras and more lighting, things like that, as time goes on. So a 15 studio complex. We have a live performance studio here that we built a little later on, and glad to be here, and happy to talk about it.
Excellent. Well, I can tell you, I've been doing some visual radio stuff and video in the studio, and I'm not talking about a static shot of a DJ behind a console, which sadly I find it to be very disturbing and just doesn't work. If you're looking to, you know, make money and be a market dominator, I don't think that's what people want to see. So we're gonna get into it. But one thing to talk about. So at your place in Houston, when you do the studios and you're doing, say, we'll do visual, right? We'll start with briefly, which program are you using for the video stuff? I'm just curious. We'll get off of that.
Well, we've actually had a few different platforms here. Prior to our rebuild, we were actually using a NewTek TriCaster here with a live operator that was in there switching it. And we actually did a webcast of one of the day parts on our sports station here, you know, every day. Monday through Friday. We actually switched over to a program called vMix recently, or I shouldn't say recently. We've had it here for about 6 months or so, and we've been using it basically as a sort of video logger. We actually record everything that goes on in our sports station all the time, and they can go in and cut up the video that's there and make a podcast out of it, or, you know, just if they happen to want to do a Facebook Live or something like that, we can go live on Facebook or any number of streaming providers. I think Facebook Live is really the only one that they have done so far. The functionality is there, and it works great for us.
Excellent. Okay. Yeah, full disclosure, the radio station that I'm employed by, we do use vMix, and we use the Facebook Live for that, and we do record with it, and we use it for 1, 2, 3 of our shows, and we've used it for a couple other events. It works out very nicely. It's a nice piece of product. So since we're talking visual radio, let's say at your facility or maybe in your encounters, how have you capitalized, or I like to say leveraged, the augmenting of the visual aspect of what we do in radio? So you have radio show. Everyone's accustomed to picking up the little box. You know, they pick up the little box and they tune in and say, tune into their favorite station. Hey, here's what we're doing. Now, all of a sudden, you have the ability to sit, say, in your car, backseat of your friend's car, maybe on the public transportation. Now you can view it as well as listen to it. How have you tailored your approach to capitalize on that new avenue for the listener?
Well, you know, really, it hasn't been so much me personally that has been driving that. Our program director for our sports station, we got a new program director about a year ago, and he was very big into social media. I don't think he would be embarrassed at all for me to tell you he's right there on the cusp of Gen X and millennial, and he's very in tune with that type of thing. So pushing stuff out to social media, he's just social media kind of all the time. And really, the packaging of kind of marquee moments in shows, getting that out there in podcast form onto our social media accounts, has been something that he's been all about, and I've just tried to help him facilitate that. Sometimes if we have a special event, like we for example, I think they were doing some talking around like the NFL draft, you know, we had a special show about that and everything, and the guys in the studio would go in and they would be doing a Facebook Live using vMix at the same time. So that's really kind of how we've been leveraging it as far as that's concerned. We also utilize vMix in our live performance studio here, and we have been doing some shows with that as well. Typically, that depends a lot on whether the artist's management will allow us to live stream the performances and things like that. But we have a multi-camera setup with vMix in our live performance studio, and we've been recording those for podcasts and also pushing those out to the web as well. And it's something I think that's going to continue to grow moving forward, but that's what we've been doing here right now.
Okay, perfect. That's pretty much the answer I was expecting. I didn't expect you to be the one orchestrating all the leveraging of how you benefit from it. But you meet with and talk with on a regular basis your programming, I call them content creators at the station, yeah. Correct?
Yes, absolutely.
Good. Right. So this is the point that I try to bring up people that I've talked to. I've had the opportunity on a few occasions to speak before some groups in different places. Friends of mine call me up and say, hey, would you speak to our engineering folks? They have no idea how you guys did that event with that technology. And this is a combination of Wi-Fi stuff as well as video and just, you know, ordinary audio over IP. And I want to try to stress, we as the techies, right? I'll say that phrase. I know some people cringe, but I'm going to say it anyway. We as techies sometimes have a different approach to the obvious, and it's a good thing. But sometimes we forget to realize that. We wind up being very introverted to the point where, as the old saying goes, you shouldn't be allowed to talk to the adults. Times have changed. It's time to change that around. And you know, from what you've described, it sounds like you do work with the adults. You talk to folks and you say, okay, you want to do this, you want to do that? Got it. Here's some stuff that works, whether it's, you know, this product A, product B, or product D. This is what you're going to do. And at the end of the day, here's what you accomplish. And I applaud you on that, because when I worked for another organization, similar to the one you are at before they changed ownership, I too had the pleasure of working with a couple of the programmers. They would come to me and say, we're trying to do X, Y, and Z, and we haven't a clue how to do it, and we're going to miss out on a great opportunity. Can you help us? I'm like, well, you know, I'm very low on the ladder right now, is where I'm positioned. You might want to, you know, go to the others above me before I offer you suggestions. And this is what I get. Yeah, we did. We were in the manager's meeting. We're in the department head meeting. We're in the executive meeting, and this is what we were told. We don't have the ability. There are no resources, and the technology is beyond the scope of what we can do. I'm like, oh, okay. And I said, well, are you coming to me? Well, you've had some conversations with people on staff, and they think that maybe you have been just looking around and figuring out ways to make things happen, which is true. And I say this because I've met a lot of folks who are in the same boat. A lot of times people above are afraid to rock the boat, change things around, don't take a chance. I haven't been around long enough to know I'm afraid. At the end of the day, you wind up losing out. So I have made it a point to learn these things. And it sounds like you guys have taken the step to do the same and figure out how do we put the two together. Me being the techie, may not be a content creator. I may not understand the concept, but I have the ability to bring the two together. How do you go about talking to your non-technical people, you know, the programmers and everybody else, producers and stuff, and say, guess what? This product, we'll use vMix as an example. This product vMix is pretty cool. It could do this, 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 and this. I have no idea how I'd use it, but maybe you do. How does that conversation go? Do you sit in on meetings with these folks? Do they come to you? Do you have to sort of push it, or you know, is it more just ad hoc?
Well, typically what I'll do is I will actually create the concept exactly the way that I think it should work. And sometimes that's a winner. Sometimes it's not a winner. For example, when I set it up for our sports station, I set it up with automated camera switching because I knew that that was something that we wanted it to do. I set it up with the graphics the way that I thought it should be and everything. And then I went and I grabbed the PD and I said, hey, I have something I want to show you in my office, you know. Oh, and he had mentioned to me that this is something that he wanted to do. And the cost actually get into this. One of the things that's really attractive about vMix as a package, it is that the price point on it is incredible. And you add that to some decent IP cameras and you have yourself a pretty powerful package to be able to do the stuff that we're talking about doing here. That was kind of the approach. Is I went and I grabbed him and I said, here's what I've been working on. What do you think? And basically I just showed him his guys in the studio who were, doing their show, and he was sitting there watching it switch automated and everything there at my desk. And I said, and I can push this out to Facebook Live. And then I pushed it out to my own Facebook account and everything. And when he was done hugging me and everything, he said, that's great. And we made a few tweaks and everything. And we've been using it ever since. And it's something that has really worked out well for us. But my approach has kind of been to I'll go ahead, because I've found over time where I tend to get in trouble as a techie guy myself is when I try to explain a concept to someone who may not be on the technical side. What we see clearly, kind of what you were alluding to in our own heads, or what I might be able to describe to you in a way that you would totally get it, and most of the people watching this podcast would totally get it. Sometimes the programming people, when they see it, it helps if it's more visual. So, and I'll do that a lot, even with things like studio layouts and things like that. Whenever I'm doing a project, I'll bring the different components in and lay them out around a studio, and I'll say, "Hey, what do you think of this arrangement?" Before we do anything that, we're actually committing ourselves to permanent, install type stuff, but I just found kind of the show and tell method works well for me.
Excellent. Well, that's basically what I used to call that my proof of concept conversation. And I would say, here's what I worked at a station many, many years ago, and we were using RPUs. And for those of you who don't know what the RPU is, it's, for those of you who might know, Marty, remember the Martys? And for those of you outside of the United States, and the OB van, it's basically an OB van, and the electronics that connected you to the studio. So I had a program director who's a good friend, and I have to say I learned so much from him that it's helped me in my career, and believe it or not, in the techie side. And he would come to me and go, I got this idea. What do you think if we could broadcast from the back of a bus on its maiden voyage, which was basically this brand new bus route in the city, and the afternoon drive guy can be in the back of the bus interviewing passengers as they get on? And I'm looking at him like, okay, how much is this worth, and really what are we looking to achieve? And he goes, just think, the competition is stationed along the route with people with phones. We could be actually in the bus waving to them. I'm like, oh, this is getting crazy. And believe it or not, I spent the weekend trying to figure out how to come up with this. And I said, we had a van. We did have Marty gear. And I happened to be watching the New York City Marathon that weekend. And oddly enough, that morning, on that Sunday morning, I'm watching them doing a live shot of the runners, right? Then the lead of the run, the lead of the race. And I noticed something. The guys with the cameras were on motorcycles or tricycles, the sidecar. And that had an antenna behind them. It was a microwave antenna, 2 gig. Goldenrod, the Golden Eagle, I think they called them, shooting back to receive sites. I said, gee, what if I put a small Yagi on the back of our van pointing toward our tower and keep turning it as I'm doing it, and had a Yagi in the front of the van attached to the mirror pointing to the back of the bus, and a 2-watt Marty in the back window. Well, I can tell you, it went well. It went so well that we started doing a lot of events and sponsoring them and people. And the owner of the company, and we had stations in Hartford, Connecticut, and Memphis, Tennessee, and St. Louis, and Denver. It was like, did we just do a live broadcast from the back of a city bus for afternoon drive? Yeah. And the newscaster was in the studio. Yes. Why wasn't he on the bus? Well, it was kind of tough. The space confinement. We just didn't have enough room. On a bus? Well, there's passengers. It's, you know, got to pay your way. We got one on for free. Can't get two. I was joking, of course. But he was like, wow. So we started doing things. We did a broadcast from a yacht race on the water, on the Long Island Sound. But what I'm getting at is you have to think like those that you're trying to serve or work with. You know, so in your case, you know, you came up with this idea. Let me put this together. Let's see what happens. Oh, this looks cool. And then you talk to your folks and go, hey, check this out. Do you think you can use it? And there you go. So I've always been a fan of the proof of concept. Do you fail? Absolutely. Is failure an option? It should be. And this is what differentiates you in the competition for staying alive. And nowadays, I have to say that the internet, multimedia, everything else, whatever you want to call it, augments our core business. And that's, in this case, radio. If you're doing TV, your core business is TV. But at the end of the day, all these other things are augmenting your core business. And if you don't appreciate that and don't understand that, we can sit here all day and talk about audio over IP, video over IP, any console that could be switched remotely from anywhere in the world, big deal. If nobody buys into it, you're not going to go anywhere. So speaking of, you know, since we have these all these funny things we do and these proofs of concept, and how do I make it easier to make something happen so we can do creative content and make money at the same time, have fun making money. What a concept. Let's go to our first sponsor, and I believe it's the Angry Audio folks. And, you know, Catfish is unbelievable. The guy is a genius when it comes to finding ways to just reinvent himself and the business he's in. So I'll leave that. I believe Kirk is going to be the voice of this spot. So let it roll, if you will, and we'll be back in a moment.
Just this week, I've been wiring a rack full of gear for some demo stuff for my employer, Telos, and it occurred to me I really need cables of different lengths. And so I got cable. I got power cables of different lengths, and I got some 1-foot Cat5 cables, some 2-foot, some 3-foot Cat5 cables, and it's looking great. Well, the same thing is true for you when you're wiring studios. You know, you may have some of these great studio hub adapters, right? Well, let's use this one, a famous gray adapter that has whatever cable you want on this end, whatever connector you want. This one has a female female XLR, I should say. And on this side, there's the female RJ45. Well, you can hook this female RJ45 to go into your AOIP network gear, like, you know, an Axia X node. And you would just plug your Cat5 cable in there. And here's a 1-foot cable. So, you know, if your equipment's pretty nearby, this makes for a nice assembly. It comes out of a satellite receiver or CD player, well, whatever it may be, and then goes into your AOIP gear, whatever's got the Studio Hub standard input. Well, that's great if you have a short cable, but what if you have a little more of a distance to go? Well, of course, any Cat5 cable will work fine. And here's the best one to get. And the best part is this one's free. Yes. When you place your order, call your favorite dealer, ask for genuine Studio Hub adapters, cable adapters from Angry Audio, and whatever ones you get with that have the female RJ45, just ask for your free Cat5 cable to go along with that. You'll get a genuine Studio Hub Cat5 cable, and that just means that it's shielded. You don't have to think about that. You don't have no soldering to do. It comes with the shielding already on it. It's a shielded cable, and the one you get for free is this one right here. It is, I don't know how many feet. Oh, 7-foot. 7-foot cable. That'll work in a lot of applications, and you can, you know, cut it short or put your own patch cables in there, whatever you like. You know what else Angry Audio has? They have these amazing guest gizmos right here. The guest gizmo is a headphone amp and plus a guest controller for their mic. They can mute their mic or actually turn the channel on and off, depending on how you wire the logic in the back. They also have these beautiful headphone amps that go under the table. And look, you won't snag your dress. You won't snag your skirt. You won't snag your pantyhose or your trousers on this headphone amp because it's got a nice, smooth surface. You won't hit your knee either and put a bruise there. Ugh, hate that. These are great headphone amps, nice and loud, 1/4 inch and 1/8 inch. And in the back, it's got the standard Studio Hub wiring. You can give it power over Studio Hub or supply your own power right here and inject power for other ones down the line. And if you like the Studio Hub headphone amps, they have those too. Why? Because Angry Audio purchased Studio Hub, lock, stock, and barrel. They got everything. Well, everything that they're making, and you can get these too from Angry Audio. Just call your favorite dealer. Ask for Studio Hub from Angry Audio. Get the genuine stuff. Thanks a lot, Angry Audio and Studio Hub, for sponsoring This Week in Radio Tech.
There you have it. So speaking of proofs of concept and doing things that hopefully can help you get through the day and make things happen for yourself, Studio Hub's approach, the Cat 5 cable. And those of you who panic and think that Cat 5 cable can't be used for audio, you have to watch This Week in Radio Tech with Steve Lampen when we were talking with him from Belden. And it's a fascinating principles behind impedance, twisted pair, and how it works, and takes you back to Electronics 101. But I'm going to leave you there with that. So, Robbie, you're doing visual radio. You got cameras in the studio. I'm sure many people are watching and saying, or listening, say, well, what kind of cameras are you using? And, like, can I afford to do this? Or how do I know that, how do I get the right camera? What size room? What size? How did you go about, I'm sure I have an idea of which cameras you chose, but how did you go about the cameras you have? And what got you, how did you determine they were the right ones for the studio size you have and the distance from the announcers and everything else?
Well, we actually have a few different types of cameras that we're using here. The most common ones that we have in the Air Studios, they work well, and their picture quality is amazing for what they are, and they are actually ubiquity IP security cameras. And we have had just exceptional luck with those Unify G3 series cameras. One thing about them, they actually lash up pretty well to the mic booms. If you have like the Yellowtech, mic poles and everything like that, you can attach them to those rather easily. I think Yellowtech actually came out with some adapters, so you can have the little screw in. I forget what it is, 10/32 or whatever, on the bottom of the camera. And run those right in. We actually put stuff together here before those came out, so we have a lot of them that are basically tie wrapped around the mic poles in the talk studios. We are also using NewTek has a PTZ camera that we utilize in some applications around here, and we actually utilize that a lot with the vMix stuff where we need to set different presets. Like, for example, when we're doing stuff in our live performance studio, we have 4 PTZ cameras in there, and we can actually go and create different scenes, down at the bottom of the vMix screen, and then be able to actually recall the camera, not only the camera, but also the camera position. And whenever you are getting ready to go to that shot, you can program that into the PTZ cameras right inside of vMix, and it'll take the camera there for you.
Nice. Very nice. I like that. So, yes, traditional television coverage and now using the newer approach, and it's even easier for radio operators to do their thing, or radio companies. Excellent. I like that. Well, you know, I'm glad you said you didn't tell me, well, we went with the Panasonic X and the Sony Y and the Ikigami H79s that we happened to find back in the TV lot. So we thought we'd go with that. So basically what you're saying is any camera that can produce an HD formatted video, which is, 920, 1080, today 920 or 720p, will do the job. The trick is your application. So you have more than one camera, different types, different purposes. That's what we're doing at my studios. We have 4 different cameras. Actually, I should say we have 7, but I brought in 3 others for experiment, which actually worked. The other 3 I brought in are prosumer HDs, and you'd never know it because I purposely make sure they're in the most well-lit spot in the studio so the sensor gets as much light as possible so the color looks good, everything is where it should be, it's sharp. We just shot a video the other day. It'll go up on YouTube, I think, in a day or two for our website. And I looked at it, I'm like, wow, that prosumer looks better than I thought. And some people are like, wait a minute, we did what? I was trying to tell you that we don't have to spend $10,000 on a camera to do what we're doing. Now, down the road, if you'd like to, that's fine. Get a sponsor. I'm more than happy to indulge, but no need to. So that's pretty cool that the ubiquity that you went with there, the security camera. I love it. That's pretty cool. Now, PTZ cameras, for those of you who do or don't know, it's what do you call it? Pan, tilt, zoom is PTZ. And you see them a lot. I've used several of the Sonys back in the day. We were doing that at the sports station I worked at. And they worked out really well. It was pretty cool. How do you What method? What's the method for switching between them? You mentioned it earlier, and I know folks always love that. It's like the silver object in the conversation. It's like, oh, look, you can switch automatically when the guy talks, which can be dangerous, which can get you in trouble. You got to be very careful with the auto switching. And I've worked with some folks with other companies that do that as part of the software. They're like, oh yeah, that's a trap you got to watch out for. How do you handle it? How do you guys approach it? I'm curious. You know, is it a third party product? Is it part of something else? Or did you sort of burn yourself on the knee, so to speak, a couple of times and realize, yeah, this is not going to work. We have to go this way, or never say this, or don't do it this way, or, you know, I'm curious, because that's definitely key if you want to make something really sizzle for your content.
Yeah. Well, what's really funny is the vMix software actually has that all built in. So you can tell it that you want a certain camera or camera switching to be automated and to actually do that by voice. Like, say, when there's audio coming into the microphone that's associated with X camera, it'll switch to it. The problem is that the vMix stuff that is built in is a bit, for lack of a better way of putting it, spastic, because it will, if somebody breathes heavy on a microphone and somebody's talking into another microphone, it'll actually switch to that other camera. Or if somebody else in the studio forgets to mute their mic while they're coughing or whatever, it'll actually switch to them for the cough. So what we are actually doing, we are an all Axia facility here, and we actually use Axia Pathfinder Core and Fusion consoles. So what I am actually doing, and this is going to sound really probably kind of out there, but I actually delay the audio that is getting fed to vMix for the camera switching. So we're actually sending all the audio into vMix using Axia Livewire, the Axia IP audio driver. And then what we actually do is we massage the audio that is getting to the automated camera switching inside vMix, inside Pathfinder Core. And the way that I'm doing that is I make use of the silent sense features that are built into Pathfinder Core, and I actually have delays that are built, and they all go into what Axia calls logic flows inside Pathfinder Core. So basically what has to happen is whenever the camera switching is taking place in my studios, the automated camera switching is being done 100% by the vMix product. It does it all on its own. But what I am doing is, like, when somebody starts talking, they have like a third of a second or a half of a second, I forget exactly what interval I put there, before it will actually switch to them. So if somebody just goes, you know, on the mic and they forget to mute, it's not going to switch to them. They have to be talking and sort of be established. And then actually all the mics, whenever we are, done talking, we actually have like an overhead camera in the studio that we zoom out to when we're headed into breaks or whatever. And, what happens is there's another, you know, part of the logic flow is when all of the mics in the studio are turned off, it will actually route the program bus audio to that camera input on vMix, and then it will switch to that. But there's a 5-second delay before that takes place. So everything's basically smoothed out in Pathfinder Core, and also using the engine, the mix engines for the Fusion consoles, and that's how we're doing it here. It's a lot of stuff under the hood with Pathfinder Core to kind of smooth out the switching and make it where it's a product more like what you would experience with a live operator there operating it. In fact, I put some demos up on my own Facebook page, and kind of challenge people to say, you know, if they thought it was was switching it, and people told me they thought it was a human. So I thought, okay, we might be onto something here.
Oh, that's absolutely great. I love it. It reminds me of when I worked at a couple of facilities where, you know, I'd be listening on the Q channel and in the control room, and, you know, you hear the producer saying, okay, ready on one, take one, ready on three, give me a close-up, ready on three, okay, take three, right? Does it sound familiar? And you're doing it all, through the software, and everything is based on the person, and you delay it purposely so it doesn't, you don't get jarred by that switching back and forth, which I see a lot of lately, which is annoying. It's almost natural. It's almost like a natural switch. It's just a simple sound. It doesn't have to go crazy. Nicely done. I like that. It was well thought out. Now, how much input did you have from others in your organization as far as when you were building out this, and how did you come up with the idea of the delay and not switching immediately. So if somebody coughs, is a buffer, if you will.
Well, the delay and everything, that part, that was pretty much that was me, because I started playing with the automated switching in vMix, and I thought, okay, this works great, but it switches like a pit bull on a steak. It's not smooth. I mean, it's like if you had one over here and you had one over here, the dog would just keep running back and forth, between them. I mean, that's not exactly what happened, but anyway, that's a terrible analogy. Ignore that terrible analogy, but I looked at it and I was like, okay, this is not a fluid product the way that it is right now. So what I'm going to do is incorporate some delay. How am I going to do that? And I started looking at the tools that I had available, and I thought, okay, Pathfinder Core, I have delays. I have audio controlled delays there. This is very easy. I have an unlimited number of them, or virtually unlimited anyway. So that was kind of the genesis of it. And I will admit, it was over a probably 2-week period. It was a thing that I was sitting in my office for about maybe an hour, hour and a half every night, just playing with a little bit more. It was kind of like audio processing. I would play with it, and I would play with it to the point that I didn't like it anymore. And then I would have to reload a prior preset and try some other stuff. So that was where we kind of went with it. And, it's still a work in progress. So if we need to do some more tweaking in the future, nobody's complaining about it. But the problem is, I know that if I watch it much more, I'm not a huge sports fan myself. But if I happen to watch it occasionally, I'll catch things, and then I might want to tweak it myself. So that's kind of the largest danger, is everybody else thinks it's fine, and then I'll go in and want to make more changes to it. So.
Nothing wrong with that. That's fine. The fact is, you've given the tools the ability to do something, and now it's up to them to close the gap between the audience and the revenue. So that's great. I mean, it's an important thing. I know I've got friends that are always busting me about, well, you and the money, you're an engineering type person. I said, well, yeah, but guess what? Without that, the engineering can't keep going. So you got to bring the two together. I don't see why not. I worked for two broadcast organizations that I thankfully did. And the way they managed and operated was basically that way. They said, look, you can do whatever you want in the engineering shop, but at the end of the day, we need to have some kind of return on investment, the ROI. We've got to figure out how do we pay for this cost so that we can still be, again, number one in the market and the most dominant media company as well. And I will say that those two companies I worked with, you couldn't touch us. That one could come close. The stuff we did, they couldn't even, they tried. And the resources that were given to me was just, it was not a blank check, but boy, if I went to the director of engineering and said, look, programming's got this wacky idea to do the X, Y, and Z. Do you think we could find some money somewhere to try a proof of concept? And if it works, we move forward with going to sales and say, look, we need a sponsor. We need some revenue, and they need to see what we can do. And the answer was never no. It was like, sure. Give it a try. Matter of fact, here's the business code to charge it to this account. And you're like, whoa, okay. And people I talk to these days with a lot of businesses, that concept is not even there. And they can't figure out why they're losing money. They're, things are just going awry. So I'm saying this from the technical side for This Week in Radio Tech. We as the techies need to understand the business side. You've got to really work it. Because I know I've met several folks when I go to the Public Radio Engineering Conference, PREC as it's called, at Vegas. I've talked to a lot of folks that, man, some of the guys out there come up with some great stuff. And it's just for that reason, to survive. So I'm going to throw that in there. And it's this episode of This Week in Radio Tech is about how Robbie has found a way to make things work for him. And yes, you could be commercial, nonprofit, whatever you want to call it. At the end of the day, it's still the same thing. The only difference is how we account for the money because of taxes, and that's it. Okay? Video is video. Whether it's vMix or anybody else, and he's switching it with Axia Pathfinder, or he's switching it with Wheatnet or Lavo or anybody else, the deal is, it doesn't matter if you're profit or nonprofit. So you go out there and make it happen. Okay? So I'm just saying. And with
and we've already profited from it here.
Well, yeah. Well, see, that's the point. Yeah. And I could tell you, when I worked at another place, which was your former group that's now new ownership, but I, again, I'll use another example, and these are true stories. This is no joke. I worked at a place, and the programming and the news director came to me one day and said, look, we got a problem. We're not going to be able to do our Thanksgiving Day parade coverage the way we normally do. I said, why not? Well, because we can't put our table set up, you know, yeah, little remote broadcast table set up at the position we normally have been doing it, because the police department has banned anybody from putting stuff there. I'm like, oh, okay, what, for safety reasons? Like, pretty much, it's got a little out of hand, all the media stuff. It's just, it's a mess. So any of you who have worked in places where there's a lot of media coverage for some event, you know, the scrum could be a little, it gets a little crazy. They were all elbowing each other. So he said to me, he goes, so what do we do? How do we work this? We got to be there. We got to do our usual annual coverage. And again, I was like, let me think about this. Went back, talked to some folks in the shop, and they're like, well, we got nothing. I'm like, what do we have that we could use? And once again, I'm watching some other event, and I'm noticing this strange setup. I'm like, oh, this is interesting. I wonder if. So I make a phone call to Mike Mason at CP Communications. God bless that man. He came up with some great stuff for me. And CP was always there for us. I have to give him a plug, because without them, we couldn't have done some of the ideas we had. And today, they still use them. So I said to him, I said, I need a wireless mic system that can do this, this, and this. And I think Electrosonics has what I need. Here's why. And I asked for this wacky antenna setup. And he's like, you want what? Where? A shark fin antenna to do what? I was like, yeah. And then I said, by the way, do you have one of those little mounting things for headphones where I can put a gain antenna on top of it for the wireless mic? And he's like, yeah, I think we have those. We use them. But you're a radio station. What do you need it for? I got this idea. So if you do the math, right, now let's go to engineering. Now we're going to talk RF. What happens with an RF signal from the point where it's transmitted to and where it's received? Obstructions in between tend to attenuate the signal. Yes, yes, they do. What if that little 10 milliwatt or 50 milliwatt wireless mic transmitter gets a little gain and is above the crowd? That's attenuating the signal back to your receiver. What if? Well, guess what? You now have a better signal and better coverage. So needless to say, we put together three of these wireless mic kits into receivers, shot them through the window of a studio, and it worked just fine. Matter of fact, it worked so well that it was the first time we used it, or second time, maybe the second time we used it, and we got national coverage. It was when the Thanksgiving Day parade had the floats. One of them hit a lamppost, knocked down, and the radio on scene reporter was from a small news station that I happened to work with, and it was with all wireless mic gear that they were able to do it. That that station was 1010 Winds. The location was Times Square, Military Island. She was walking around on Broadway on the street, approximately half a block away from our Times Square studios that we had borrowed the space to use, and I was shooting through the window with a directional antenna out to the person a half a block away. And it worked. On paper, everyone told me it can't work. There's no way it can work. You can't do this. And for the next 10 years, we did it that way. And boy, did we enjoy it. And boy, did we make money off it. And boy, did people look at us and go, what the? Because didn't need a table at the Military Island location. So my guys could walk around all they want, smack in the middle of the parade, when everyone else was told, sorry, you can't be there. Because why? If you're a TV, you need sticks. If you're another radio station, you want a table to sit at, because that's what you do. No. We went the other way. So pushing the proof of concept, understanding what you're trying to do, and pushing the envelope, sure, go ahead. Could it hurt? Absolutely. Could that have failed miserably for me? Absolutely. But I spent time, just like you did, an hour and a half here, an hour here. Let me go back to the original. I spent time understanding the limits of the product. I mean, I talked to the guys at Electrosonics. Some of the stuff they told me, I'm like, Are you allowed to tell me this stuff? Is it like intellectual property here? I mean, this is, they're like, no, it's basic RF. It's just that nobody ever asked the question. I was like, okay, cool. And that's what I did. And it worked. And to this day, my buddy who still works there, he always laughs. He's like, look, it's the funniest thing. We can do stuff and everyone claims it's impossible. And again, you look at it, understand it, and then you make things happen. And I just, I love what you're doing. I love the fact that you're doing the vMix, switching everything. And it's like, yeah, I had to do a little tweak, but boy, does it work great. I'm like, oh man, you know, 10 years ago, you have to have like, two people in the room, the equipment, you know, the switcher and, you know, everything else. And then, speaking of everything else and all the things you had to do back in the day, are you utilizing, what was that protocol, the IP protocol for the video?
RSTP?
I can't think of it now.
RSTP?
NDI?
NDI, New Tech NDI.
NDI.
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely. And we actually are utilizing that. The new tech cams that we have in our live performance studio, they are all connected via NDI. We actually have, believe it or not, we use vMix for a display that's in our lobby that involves cameras that are in each of the air studios, the FMs, and in addition to the sports. Well, and that's a what's funny, that's an idea that came from my general manager, actually. She wanted people, when they came up to, you know, to the radio station, they wanted to see something, you know, she wanted them to see something that was larger than life in the lobby. So we basically have an 80-inch screen out there that has cameras in all of our studios. And when the jocks are talking, it goes to live to them. They can see it on the screen out in the lobby. And whenever they're not talking, it's just all the different jocks there. It might be the jock eating a bowl of oatmeal, but and that was the conversation that the GM and I had. I'm like, I'm not sure we want to show the morning show host eating a bowl of oatmeal. She's like, nope, it's real. It's larger than life. It brings the listeners closer to what we're doing. They can see it and be a part of it. And, eventually the jocks got comfortable with the idea as well. So, it's worked out pretty well, and it's a neat thing. So we're actually using NDI. The computer that's running that whole shebang is in our TOC. And then we actually shoot everything to a little IP, video IP device made by, gosh, I forget the name, Bird Dog or something like that. And it's basically just an NDI player, and it has like SDI outs, it has HDMI outs, and we just run it to the HDMI input of that display, and that's how we get the video to our lobby display. So, yeah, we have probably 7 or 8 NDI connected cameras around the facility, and then we have that one feed to our lobby that's also NDI, and it works pretty amazingly. We have some network segments here that are not the fastest, you know, still running on 100 megabit switches, and it doesn't have a problem. It doesn't choke it down. I don't know exactly what it's throwing away in terms of the NDI encoding, but the picture is pretty darn good.
Wow. Nice. Nicely done. I like that. That's what I'm talking about. That's the point of this episode, is to be looking at beyond. And the fact that your general manager came up with an idea and you were able to make it happen is even better. That she was comfortable with asking. She actually was willing to talk to you and say, hey, by the way, I'm thinking this, and wasn't, you know, afraid of, oh boy, here we go. I'm going to be told something. I have no idea what they're saying, and it's above my head. This is great. This is great.
No, she's, I know it's and tough. I'm very blessed here because my GM, and this is not just I don't have anything on my nose here, do I? But I'm very blessed that the GM here at Entercom Houston, she is a terrific lady. She's I know this is a very cliche phrase, but she's a very much an out of the box thinker herself, and she is not at all shy about saying, "Hey, Robbie, I want to do this. What do you think?" And I shoot straight with her. I'm like, if I do not see any conceivable way that I can make it happen, I'll suggest an alternative, or I'll make it happen for her. And we have a great relationship that way. And she's very approachable, and we actually do a lot of brainstorming sessions like that. Things like that. That's how we come up with things. Like our IP video, we brought it to them. You know, we were talking about monetizing it earlier when the Texans were in their playoffs, you know, run for the Super Bowl. I mean, the big game. You may have to dump that for the big game. I should know better. This is why I'm not on the air anymore. But we actually went live on Facebook Live 24/7 while they were doing their run up to the championship game. And we did that, and it was sponsored by a pretty large regional supermarket chain the entire time. I have no idea what the take was on that, but I'm confident they made some money, and everybody was pretty happy with the whole thing. So to your point earlier about monetization and having that relationship, you know, with that end of the building and, you know, the people who are more sales focused and everything, there's a lot of opportunity as long as you just keep those channels of communication open. And, you know, I have found more often than not, at least here, that the people around me, if I bring them an idea, you know, sometimes I'll say, Robbie, that's so far fetched, we'll never be able to sell it. And sometimes sometimes they run with it, and we make some money. So it works out.
Well, that's the point I was trying to make, is that's exactly what I worked with a general manager many, many, many years ago, and he was the same way. He was like, look, what do you think of this? Do you think we can do this? And I would say to him, I wouldn't say no. Never say no. What you have to say is, let me give this some thought. There's going to be a cost involved, and if we can do it, are you willing to pay? This way you give them the choice, you give them an option. Then you go back to your office and you sit there and honestly answer the question, can this be done properly, and repeat it? If you can't, then you may have to say no, because it just can't be done. Don't ever say yes immediately, because you box yourself into a corner and you'll never be able to get out of it. And I worked with a program director, and God bless him, and he was the same way. He was like, I got this idea. What do you think? You know, does this make sense? And I would always tell him, I said, it makes total sense. I get where you're trying to go with it, but I don't think the technology we have access to in the house right now could do it. But if you can afford a rental, I think I can make it happen. Give me one day and I'll get back to you. Did that two or three times and never had to worry about it again. He just knew. He's like, now I'm getting a straight answer. That's the key. You need to have a straight answer. You have the trust between you and your manager, or whatever you want to call them, you know, the people you're working with. Because at the end of the day, the goal is have fun making money. Okay, that's the phrase. That's the phrase. Remember that. It's the phrase that pays. Have fun making money. All right? Be the 14th caller at 21 past the hour. Okay, never mind. That's a way back machine for some folks. But just having some fun. Speaking of fun, outdoor events, generating revenue, how else can you do it with tools? You need the right tools. We gave you angry audio in the beginning. Now that's the connection between the tools. Now what you need to talk about is, what if I had a Pro Mix 4? How does a Pro Mix 4 help me make money and have fun? I could do it sports. I could do it news. I could do other things. And even the big game could be involved if you want. And with that, we're going to go to, yes, that's right, we're going to go to the Broadcast Tools Pro Mix 4 promo or spot. And Kirk's going to tell us about it. Please roll.
This Week in Radio Tech is brought to you in part by Broadcasters General Store. Man, what great people they are there. They're in Ocala, Florida, but it doesn't really matter where they are, because we have FedEx, we have UPS, we have any, you know, the Postal Service if you want. They can get you the broadcast products you want quickly, and they can tell you where it's at, how long it's going to take to get there, and they have the best prices around. Just tell them, hey, put a sharp pencil on this. I got to have a good price, and they will do it. I've been buying from Broadcast General Store for years and years, and one of the cool things that they carry is a whole line of products from Broadcast Tools. Now, you know, Don Wingate, his company, Broadcast Tools, man, we've used this stuff for years to control satellite receivers and switchers and just all kinds of things. Well, one of the cool products that they have at Broadcast Tools is this Pro Mix 4. Why is it cool? Because it's small. It's diminutive. It's a mixer. It's a four-input mixer, and one of those inputs can be the USB input. So that's kind of cool. It does have a talkback capability. And here's the weird thing. It's weird and it's good. It's mono. It's not stereo. It's monaural. That means you can send this mixer out with your morning disc jockey, with your evening team, whatever. You can send this out with the sports guys, and they can set it up. It's easy to plug things into. In fact, the first three inputs are mic in or line level in, and they can take either the XLR connector, a male XLR connector going into it, or a quarter-inch tip ring sleeve. It's got those Neutrik connectors on there that do either way. So that's really cool. Also, it has, of course, a VU meter right there on the front of it, LED VU meter, with the red lights if they're getting too hot. It does have a USB input, so you just plug this into your Mac or your PC, your laptop, and it becomes a sound card to the PC. That means whatever you play on the PC becomes an input on the Pro Mix 4. And the Pro Mix 4's output goes to the PC. That means if you're running a program on your PC like Skype, for example, or any one of a number of different codecs like CleanFeed, well, your audio can go cleanly from the Pro Mix 4 through the PC and right back to the radio station. It does have a balanced program output also, if you want that. It has a defeatable soft clipper, so, you know, your sports guys can yell, he shoots, he scores, and they're not going to blow out the output. It has a mix minus output as well, so if you want to go to use a codec or you even bring phone calls into it, you've got that mix minus output. Full duplex talkback capability if you use the ProMix Hub 6 controller. That's sold separately, but you do get that really cool talkback capability. Go to the Broadcast Tools website and read all about it. The manual's online there. You can look at a diagram, PDF download, or just look at the product page and find out more about it at BroadcastTools.com. And, of course, our friends at Broadcasters General Store can answer questions that you might have about the ProMix 4. Call them at Broadcaster General Store at 352-622-7700. They are set up to take your phone calls, to actually talk to a live, real person when you call Broadcaster General Store, or go to the website at bgs.cc. Thanks a lot, Broadcaster General Store and Don Wingate at Broadcast Tools for sponsoring, bringing you This Week in Radio Tech.
Excellent, excellent. So we spoke about how to connect the boxes to do our creative juices and make things happen. We talked about the box that can help you get there. And the end of the show, we're going to talk about how you can connect all these together and do it on location without a long wire back to the studio. But you'll have to wait for that. So, Robbie, we're talking about visual radio. We're talking about all these wonderful things. The concept, what you're doing in the studios, have you taken it on the road on a regular basis? Do you have a takeaway kit, an OB kit, an outside broadcast kit that says, hey, in this road case, we've got blah, 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 standard set. We don't mix and match every time. It's the standard setup, and off we go. So we got a sports cafe, we're doing something, or maybe we're going to a ball game. Do you have that kind of thing? Have you gotten that far yet, or is that something in the works? You can't talk about it.
Not with the video. To be totally honest, our remote kits for our sports station, we are out all the time with the Texans franchise here, you know, the Houston Texans, and also our sports station. They're probably on remote at least two or three times per week, during the season, a lot more than that. And we actually have three different remote kits now that are all built around Dante. You know, so we actually have Dante remote kits, and so we basically plug everything into a PoE hub instead of rolling out miles and miles of snake cable, and that works well for us. So yeah, on remotes we utilize that.
Excellent. Glad to hear you're using Dante. I talked to some folks recently. They're asking me, like, what would you use? How would you do this? And I was like, look, if it was up to me, I'd take a Dante infrastructure and make that my setup, because I find it to be the most versatile. And I've on three occasions we've done some recordings, artist recordings, and when it got to the sound studio, I asked him, I said, what do you have here in house that I can connect to? He says, well, we've got this Dante enabled console, this Yamaha box. I'm like, oh, nice, I got a MacBook that has Dante and the ability to take audio. I'm like, let's do it. Ethernet cable in, and I got 64 channels of audio. I've got every mix I need. It was like, it's like, this is scary. I remember the days of a whirlwind case, and you're like, oh, here we go. Oh boy, I'm missing a connector. No, wait a minute, I need a male, not a female, and it's just a mess. I take it by you doing the Dante approach on those remote kits. It's helped to eliminate a lot of the squirrely, quirky. Like, what is that audio? What are you thinking?
Yeah, no, and it works out great for us. We use the I forget the name. I think Studio Technologies is the name of the company, and they make these great little Dante boxes. And there are two or three different manufacturers that have that type of product. The talent just plugs into it, one cable, and the thing about it, people, I think, when they're especially when they're thinking in terms of like analog and the traditional wiring and everything, they're like, what if? And I can tell you that, and this is one of those knock on wood moments, we really haven't had the issues that we used to have with the analog kits since we switched to the Dante. And we built the first one, put it into service about almost 5 years ago. So, and it's been on the road ever since. That particular one, I think, has a Soundcraft Expression SI. The rack mount version of that console. But there's a lot of others out there. Our live performance studio up here is Dante Snakes up to the stage as well. That's a Midas M32 in there. On air, I am very much in favor of live wire and Wheatnet type solutions. The Dante has made great inroads for the stuff that is more traditional PA or recording, I think, and the whole world seems to like that standard for things like remote broadcasts.
Yeah, no, I couldn't agree with you more. And I've had several occasions at SBE meetings, people ask me, you know, you have a live performance space, you've got several recording studios, plus you're a broadcast studio. How would you do it? How would you set up the technologies if you had a checkbook to do stuff? I'm like, well, definitely consider Wheatnet, Livewire, that kind of thing, you know, in the broadcast side. But I'd be Dante all the way for the performance spaces and some of the studio setups and the way we do things. And I got this look of like, what? You know, sacrilege. I was like, no, it's application specific. You know, it's like an ASIC chip. It's like the two products that you spoke about, the two methods I said, you know, Livewire, Wheatnet, and there's also Ravetta and others. They have an application and it works ideally for that. And you should not deviate from that thinking. But when it comes to live performance, and you know, because you do them, as I know, that's a whole different animal. Let's be just frank about it. And it's, you know, you can't even begin to think, how would I mix and match? It wouldn't work. So Dante has been my choice of taking that approach, and it seems to have paid off. So I'm glad to hear that somebody else is doing the same thing in a similar, as I call it, a hybrid environment. And it's worked out well. That's very nice. Well, someday you'll get video on the road. It'll be good. I'm only kidding. Don't worry. I know you got enough headaches.
Well, we've done it. We have a Sling studio that we tried out for a while for some video application on the road. You know, that was kind of video version 1.0. And it works for what it is and everything. But I think our next application will probably be built around VMix.
Well, see, but this is what we've been talking about for the entire episode. You took out a product that wasn't VMix, wasn't something else, and you said, here's my idea. Let's see if we can make this work and see what happens. So you could say, in some respects, we failed at the initial way of doing it, but we learned from that failure that the next version, version 1.2 or 2.0, would be VMix, which means you've already thought about what would be required to take VMix out of the studio and into the field. These are the steps that you have to have. You cannot just jump into it and go, well, we bought this $10,000 switching box and a computer, and it didn't work. Well, yeah, of course it's not going to work because you didn't think about it. You know, it's like, I love the way you're going about it. This is the way it should be. That's why I push this every time at SBE meetings or I get a chance to talk to folks and they come in and I say, hey, could you talk to us about this? And well, how'd you guys do this? I'm like, this is it. This is the key. It's really good. It's funny. It reminds me of talking with some folks at the BBC years ago when they were looking to build these OB vans and trying to do stuff in the field. And I was doing it just as an ad hoc and I didn't realize it was something that actually made sense what they wanted to do. I built my own little Wi-Fi WAN at my remote vehicles, whether it was a van or a car. And I would tell my reporters, look, relay back to the car, and then the wireless cellular modem will get you back to the studio, and we'll do it that way. Rather than try to go from your phone, tablet, or laptop through a modem plugged into the PCMCIA slot or the USB connect that snapped off, and now it's not working. Just, you know the environment you're in, you know where you are, you control it. Let's do it this way. And then I went to an AES conference, and there's a guy from the BBC talking about their vans and how they're doing this whole setup. Like, oh, look at that. So it's good to think, and as you put it, you know, out of the box, maybe a little, you know, some people don't like that, tough bananas. Think out of the box. Think beyond. Think the what if. I just had that conversation with someone 2 days ago about in a transmitter facility. What if? I said, have you asked that question? Well, the reason I'm asking is we're here with a disaster in your facility because you didn't ask, what if? I said, that's the key. You have to ask the question, what if? And it's good. And it's a good practice. So, you know, it's exciting to see that you guys are in that frame of thought. How many folks in Houston at your facility? It's you and how many other technical people? Is it just you and you work with all the producers and stuff like that?
Well, it's me. I actually have a technical staff of five here. So basically, it's myself, and then I have an assistant DTO, assistant chief engineer, basically, and then I have an IT manager, and then I have two remote techs because we do that many remote broadcasts. But my junior remote tech also, he helps out. He is kind of the guy who pitches in whenever anything needs to be done around the studios. Our business manager or whatever will come up with some chores for him, and he does them gleefully with a smile on his face every single time. So I'm very blessed to have a great team here. And yeah, excellent. So it's me and four other guys. Yeah.
Excellent, excellent. Before we go to our last break, which is going to help us connect all of our resources together that we spoke about in this episode, I just have to ask the question, do you operate under the premise of you have a broadcast revenue network in the facility and the business network on the land?
Yes, basically, yes. The Axios stuff, of course, is on its own totally isolated network. And then, yeah, they're pretty isolated. We do have some stuff that, communicates across the firewall, but yeah, for the most part, they're pretty isolated.
Excellent. Excellent. That was another conversation I had this week with somebody. I just couldn't understand why they were having problems with their studio and their switches. And I was like, well, you're mixing everything together. Trust me, you're lucky it's even working. So with that, let's now go to our wireless solution. And we spoke in the early part of the episode about the Angry Audio product, formerly known as Studio Hub. I actually say it is Studio Hub. And that connects your boxes together so you could do that sports broadcast, that talk show, or maybe the newscast. But now what if you're on location? What if you're in the middle of, say, Times Square, and you need to get back to the studio with something? You got your Studio Hub connection. You've got your Pro Mix 4. But just got no other way to get back. This next product, our sponsor, may help you get there. So let's have Kirk tell you about it.
This Week in Radio Tech is brought to you in part by Max Connect Wireless and Josh Bone, B-O-H-N at Bone Broadcast. You know, for years, Josh Bone had the same problem that so many of us engineers had. We go out on a remote, we try to use cellular data, right? Maybe make a hotspot with the phone or even get one of those MiFi boxes. And we're doing a broadcast, and all of a sudden in the broadcast, it starts going, why? Well, because there's people around us also using cell phone data. Maybe somebody fired up a hotspot somewhere else. Maybe 2,000 people in the stands fired up their phones during halftime. No good. Well, you know what is good? Max Connect Wireless. What's different about it? Well, it's just a Cradlepoint router, and they have some other brands of routers as well. But what makes the difference here is Max Connect Wireless actually gives you a prioritized connection to the cell companies, something you can't do yourself. You can go in and scream all you want at the AT&T or Verizon office or T-Mobile and ask for prioritized data, and they'll go, huh? Everybody's important. Now, Max Connect Wireless, Josh Bone went and did the work, and he got this company, Max Connect Wireless, formed the company and worked with three carriers, that is AT&T, Verizon, and Sprint, to give you prioritized, real prioritized data over everybody else. The only people more important than you, as far as the data is concerned, are first responders, as it should be. And they don't use that much data typically. So what do you get? Call Max Connect Wireless. Go to the website, maxconnectwireless.com, and look up how to order one of these. Or call Bone Broadcast. The phone number's right there on the Max Connect Wireless site. You get a router. You get the paddle antennas to get you connected to the wireless network. These are SMA connectors, so if you have an external antenna, let's say you're a little far from a cell site, you can just put your little Yagi antenna there and get you some better range there. Or you can have this inside your station van and put antennas on the roof. Do all that. This also has, it can have dual SIMs. This one does. So I can go with AT&T or Verizon and get prioritized data on either one of those. You got a LAN connection right here, so you can get wired, a wired connection to your laptop, your computer, whatever you need to do, your audio over IP codec, whatever it may be. Works with all of them. And if you want to do some Wi-Fi, well, they got Wi-Fi antennas for that purpose, too, and a place to plug those in on the unit as well. Max Connect Wireless, it works when your phone doesn't. It really does. As far as data is concerned, it'll get you on the data channel on the nearest cell tower and get you going, get you on the air. We've used it here at This Week in Radio Tech, and we've also used it at the SBE. And let me tell you, literally hundreds of broadcasters are using Max Connect Wireless now to do real remote broadcasts and as a backup for their transmitter site. It works great for getting audio to the transmitter site if things are down otherwise, like the tornado that hit my STL tower. Check them out, maxconnectwireless.com. Thanks a lot for sponsoring This Week in Radio Tech.
All right, there you have it now. So let's review quickly. You've got your Studio Hub connections, you've got your Pro Mix box, and now you've got your Max Connect. However, now I know a few of you in the audience are saying, wait a minute, if I'm in the middle of nowhere, how am I going to make Max Connect work without a battery or without power? That's why I went and purchased one of these from my Max Connect. It's a power bank. It's 11 amps. And I got the adapter cable that goes, there we go, there it is, to the Cradlepoint router. This is running my Cradle Point for 5 hours the other day. I tested it. 5 hours. Not one hiccup. I'm still on four LEDs for the power source. So just remember, thinking out of the box is important. Thinking about the what if question and then saying to yourself, is it possible and why would I want to do it? Because maybe it helps to make money. Maybe I keep my job. Let's be honest. Some of us, every day is a new day of whether or not I'm going to be here, because it can happen. It's business. So This Week in Radio Tech reminds everybody, think beyond the technology. Think about the application. Robbie Green apparently has got it all right. He's got it down to the point now. He's an hour and a half a night working on settings on a box and goes, yeah, it could be a little better. Most people say, no, we're good. The switch is nice. No, you don't understand. It could be better. It could actually be a little better. And that's good. That's an important factor. And you've got to, you know, these are the things we've got to keep in mind. We're also running out of time. It's 6:04. Well, it's time to wrap things up. But in any case, I don't know. I mean, there's several other questions I have, and it's just when you're doing remotes, when you're doing things and trying to connect with technologies, it's just sometimes the next day is different than the day before and the day after that. Is that true?
Oh, yeah, absolutely. Things change all the time, and sometimes you have to have more flexibility. So, that's one of the things, talking about thinking out of the box. One of the things that's really pretty awesome about where we are now is the size advantage that you get with a lot of the smaller stuff, like the little rack mount, control it with a tablet or a laptop, mixing consoles. I've been thinking a lot about that in terms of our stuff for the NFL broadcasts, game day broadcasts and Radio Row type stuff. That's always been a thing. I don't know how many people watching have been to like the Super Bowl or the Big Game Radio Row, and it is you'll just see a mishmash of various stuff out there, and that's one of the thoughts that I have had of ways to condense that and using the audio and video over IP technology to be able to do that and really clean up our setup and also make it more effective.
Yep, you hit it on the head. Trust me, I've done many of those radio rows at the Big Game, working for Westwood One and CBS and ABC. So, yeah, I know exactly what you're talking about. We strived very hard to come up with a scaled-down system that worked, functional, was repeatable and reliable, so that when things started, we didn't have to panic. We just sit back like lifeguards, watch everybody swim, and have a good time. So that's the goal. That's how it should be. And earlier I mentioned about the BBC helping me understand and do stuff. I have to say thank you for the BBC master control operator today. We had an interview at the studio. Not us. We rented out our studio, but it was for the BBC World Service. And I'm on the phone with the operator, MCR, master control operator, setting up the IP codex across the ocean. And he happens to ask me if I was the co-host of a show called This Week in Radio Tech, because the name seemed to be familiar. So I just want to say thank you again for your help. It was great, and really appreciate you watching it and participating with what we've been doing. So I had to throw that out there, because it's just, it's one of those things you don't expect when you're on a phone call with somebody literally, across the ocean in another place without any pretense. So with that, I guess we're going to have to say our goodbyes and hopefully catch up again. But before we do, Rob, you have anything else you want to impart? I know we normally do a tip of the day, but time being what it is, I think we're going to pass on that. We've given plenty of tips throughout the episode, so I think if you haven't caught all of them, go back to the beginning. So what do you say? What do you got for, your closing thoughts or words?
It's been fun. Look forward to doing it again sometime.
Excellent. Man, a few words. I love it. So with that, remember, think out of the box. Don't worry if you fail. Just make sure you fail in a controlled environment. Just, don't free fall onto on a sidewalk. That's all. Things like that. And if you do have a general manager or a VP or a director or whatever that has ideas, and find a way to talk to them on their level. Understand where they're coming from. Don't expect them to understand Kirchhoff's law, Ohm's law, or anything like that. It's not going to happen. But at least understand where they're coming from, so you can talk to them. They don't feel intimidated, and they'll work with you. And in the end, you may benefit greatly, and you won't realize it until after 2 or 3 months have gone by, and you're like, ooh, look at that. So with that, I'm Chris Tobin, co-host of This Week in Radio Tech. Kirk Harnack, our host, is on location. Well, he's on assignment. I guess we'll use that phrase. Robbie Green has been our guest. From the Houston market. And I guess, what's the proper, should I say Houston Entercom or Entercom Houston? Is that how?
Entercom Houston. It's Entercom Houston. So, yeah.
Excellent. Well, again, thank you very much, Robbie, for making the time and being with us and with the audience and everyone who's tuned in and both listening and watching. And with that, Well, again, we look forward to seeing and hearing from you guys next week. And don't feel afraid not to send an email or come by the website and let us know what you have ideas and questions. Some of the topics we talk about do come from the emails we get. So, feel free to toss them out. No guarantees yours will be next, but at least they'll be on the list. So, again, this week in Radio Tech –